really what his status will be till the end of the week. You know, we'll see where he can go. I don't think he's going to go in practice today, less from the looks at it, just seeing him in the training room. But we'll see if there's something he can do tomorrow and Saturday. But right now, he's very doubtful.
What happened to the kid?
I don't know. I don't ask. I mean, can we get this out of the way? I'm never going to ask. I don't care. Just tell me if they can play or can't play. That's all I ever ask. I'm not a doctor, so it's a grade 32. I don't know what that means. You don't know what that means. So I don't care. I never ask those questions. There's no reason for me to ask those questions. So just tell me if he can play or can't play. And that's the same conversation I have with Chris Peduzzi and Dr. DeLuca all the time. Is he up or is he down?
Sproles has 34 touches in the first two games. I realize it's a small sample. But that can a guy his size and his age do that for an entire season?
That's a good question. I think he can. I think when you look at his fitness level, and I think his size is a there may be a little misconception there. He's 200 pounds, you know, and I think that's where he's short, but he's not small. And I think there's a difference between that. Sometimes you worry if someone's a smaller guy, Demaris Johnson. You know, you obviously couldn't put Demaris in there. You know, Demaris did a great job for us spelling us and running back in the preseason, but we were very concerned. You know, how many times I was really nervous in the one game where we had a couple guys down. I mean, how many times can we really run Demaris? Because it's a different type of body. But I think when you look at Darren, is he's really, really put together. And then he's probably the most fit guy on our team. I mean, there's a special quality to him from that standpoint. And I don't know if we knew that when we got him. You know, when we first looked at him, obviously the dynamic ability as a returner, you know, jumps out at you, his ability to catch a ball coming out of the backfield. And then, as I said, after a couple of days dealing with him, really impressed with him as a running back. You know, that wasn't something that was a preconceived notion, but it was just after me watching him first couple of days, I'm like, this kid's got a pretty good ability as a running back. And then when you see his size, I think he's a little bit different than your prototypical small guy. So.
Speaking of size, you told Washington Reporters yesterday that, you know, the reason for releasing Deshaun was because
we were going in a different direction at the wide receiver position. Yeah.
Bigger receivers. And I'm just wondering why you guys bought Jeremy Maclin back when he's smaller than 70% of the starting outside wide receivers.
Jeremy Macklin's bigger than Deshaun is, isn't he?
Yeah, but he's smaller.
So he's bigger than 1% of the guy you're talking about. I'm confused with the question.
Well, I'm saying he's smaller than 7% of the wide receivers in the league.
Yeah, I mean, you can't get everybody to 6'5". You know, I mean, everybody ideally would like a Megatron-type guy, but you can't get all those guys. So you got to make a decision on what direction you're going, and that's the decision we made.
Would you say that there is, like, a balance with talent versus the size, how much you're willing to go? With a, you know, how far down the scale in terms of size you're willing to go with a guy?
Yeah, a lot of it has to do the weight part's the biggest thing for a lot of us in terms of what we're looking at too. So,
you guys do a lot of things, obviously, practice, training, to try to maximize performance during the game. Is there anything that the sports science end of things can help a receiver with dropping the football? Is that simply an individual thing?
No, I think a lot of it's repetition. A lot of it's concentration. You know. Guys that have drops, it's not that they have bad hands. It's just, you know, at times they're not just focusing, concentrating. We always talk about eyes, fingers, things like that, and that's more of just a repetition thing and a feel thing. No different than a golfer putting. You know, some days he's got a great putter going. He's doing a great job out there, and he's hitting long distance putts and hitting everything. And then other days he's a little bit more inconsistent. So,
seems like a product of your offense is that other teams do things differently than they normally do to try to keep you guys off the field. Presumably, it's one of the reasons the Colts ran the ball so much. Do you just kind of talk about how your offense gets other people? Is that something you've seen for a while?
I think it's every game's different. You know, some people have tried to. I don't know if that's what their intentions were. I think sometimes maybe some people read too much into that. Maybe they saw something in us defensively that felt like they wanted to, you know, exploit the run game. I don't know. I mean, that's a question for other teams when they play us. But I haven't seen people just sit there and look at the play clock and wait till 5 seconds to go to milk the clock or anything that thing. I mean, actually, if you watch the Colts game, the Colts are in hurry up. So I don't think they're in. I think people are reading too much into that with them running the football. I didn't get the impression from watching that game and being there on the sideline that they were trying to work the clock in any manner to keep us off the field. It's just maybe they thought in their game plan that they could run the ball on us, and they were. I'll give them credit. In the first half, they did a really good job of it. We had to make some adjustments to shut that down, so I thought they were doing some really good things there. But if you really watch that game, they didn't look like they were trying to work the clock. They actually played hurry-up against us. So You know, I didn't see that aspect of it. I don't see it that way. I just think they probably saw something in the run game that they thought they could exploit. So.
Marcus says he's practicing an inside linebacker this week. Is that a temporary thing because of the numbers, or do you?
Yeah, it's a numbers. It's a numbers thing. I don't know where it will play out from now on. But, you know, when you only have four inside linebackers in your 53, and then one of them's hurts, you know, we got to bring someone over. And so, we brought Marcus over from outside linebacker, and we'll see, you know, how he fits and what he can do. But obviously, you got to be prepared if you lose a guy or two at inside linebacker. What do? It's no different than, you know, Trey Burton being another running back for us, or James Casey, or Brad Smith, or those guys being emergency quarterbacks for us. It's just being able to make sure you got all your bases covered in case an injury were to come up. So,
what part of Marcus Smith's skill set translates to inside linebacker?
I mean, I think he's athletic. He's got great change of direction. You know, and it's been one day, so I can't tell you much more than that. So,
when you look at Washington's defense, is their pass rush your biggest concern?
I think their front is, you know, and it's, you got two outstanding outside linebackers in Arakpo and Kerrigan. They added Jason Hatcher, who I have a ton of respect for. I think he played really well against us the last two times we played Dallas last year, and now he's in that front. They also are very big across the front. They got two really good linebackers in Keenan Robinson and Perry Riley. You know, they got two real good inside guys. So that front seven is very, very formidable. So,
Chip, when you said Kendricks is very doubtful, is that for today or for Sunday?
For today, you know, and we'll see. But I know, it shouldn't be. He's out today. So we'll see. And I'm not putting anything on him. We'll see what he can do tomorrow and Saturday, and then we'll make a decision on what's the best for him overall. But
and who's going to be in his stead today?
They're rotating those Acho and Casey in there.
A screen pass to work effectively, like various things and all that.
A lot of timing is involved in it. Obviously, a big rush is a big factor in it. You know, if the defensive line's not rushing and they're sitting on the line of scrimmage, it's very difficult to get a screen pass off. But if you got people teeing off and coming after you and doing a real good job in the pass rush, then a screen pass is a way to kind of negate that. There's a lot of timing involved in it. Is when does the back get out? When is the lineman gets out? Who gets out? You know, do you have a three technique to your side? Do you have a one technique to your side? Do you have a clean release? You know, who's first out, who's second out, who's blocking the kick out, who's got the alley. You know, there's a lot of different factors, and we spend a lot of time on it in practice, in our training sessions out here, and we've been successful. And it also takes, you know, a guy that has the knack for doing it, and I think both LeSean and Darren have proven that they've got a real good knack for running those type of plays. So.
You talk about the importance of the offensive lineman and the chop blockman, and you always, seems like you say, high into the thigh, why?
Chop blocking?
Yeah.
That's illegal.
Cup blocking.
I just think it's another weapon. If someone is on the defensive side is running full speed and you don't have an opportunity, you know, he's coming at you in a full speed manner, is that the change up you can do as an offensive lineman and on a screen pass is to be able to cut him and take him low. So,
in a short week, whether it's a Thursday game or a tough turnaround like this, from a coaching standpoint, what's the most difficult thing for you to make sure your team's 100%?
Just how much do you push them those days immediately after the game? You know, usually if we're playing a game on a Sunday, like almost except for three occasions this year, we're playing Sunday games, so they have Monday off. You know, they kind of have that day off. And then we come back out on Tuesday and we run around a little bit and loosen up a little bit. But I would phrase our Tuesday practice as kind of a medium day. And then we get going. Then we have two full-speed days. So yesterday's full-speed day was really 2 days removed from playing. So it was, you know, we're a little conscious of where those guys were. So we're hoping we're a little bit. We can move a little bit more today, and then we get ready. We're starting to get into what our 48-hour phase is before a game. But it's just that recovery time that you normally don't get. You don't get into that, what we talk about, that battle rhythm that, you know, every Monday's the same, every Tuesday's the same, every Wednesday's the same, every Thursday's the same. So it's really just being conscious, knowing yesterday when we were out there training is that we were still 2 days removed from a game. So.
In your 4 years at Oregon, you had a tight end and a running back lead the league, lead the team in receiving yards. And you only once had a 1,000-yard receiver. Is that the way the offense is designed to have the tight ends and the running backs more involved?
We are equal opportunity distributors. So, how do you want to defend us? Doesn't matter. You know, if there's a matchup we can exploit, then we'll exploit it. But there's no, we don't have a set number that this needs to go here, this needs to go here, this needs to go here. It's, you know, a lot of times it's different guys, different games. You know, and. One game it's one guy, one game it's another guy. So it's not by design, if that to answer your question, that we're trying to go one way or another way. You know, David Paulson, who was playing for the Steelers, is an outstanding receiver. We had some really good running backs. Those are strengths for us, you know, in terms of our football team. But I think Mayo led us in receiving that when he was all Pac-12. So And he led the team in receiving. You said our tight ends and running backs led the team in receiving, didn't you?
Besides that, 1 year I had Mills.
So in the 4 years, 1 year it was a receiver, 1 year was a tight end, and 1 year was a running back?
Twice a receiver, once a running back, once a tight end.
So two receivers, one tight end, and one running back.
I only had 1,000-yard receiver. My question was about distributing it among different players.
Here's what happened at Oregon. We were up 50 points in a lot of games, so we threw the ball less than ever. And I had that question last year 1,000 times, as you really emphasize the run. Well, when the score is 50-3 at halftime, we're not coming out in the second half and jacking the ball around. So we had some running backs that were seventh string that were our scout squad guys that got more touches than an all Pac-12 receiver in a game. That's because the game itself dictated that. So when you look at the whole of statistics from a year, it's very tough to study, like, well, why are they that? We ran the ball a ton there just because we were up a ton. You know, you look at other teams that, you know, you're a pass-operated offense. Well, we are because we're always behind. You know, so, and it's the same thing. I think if whenever you have a chance to be a really – you show me any football team in football that's a great four-minute offense, then they're a really good football team because that means they're up all the time. So I hope our running backs carry the ball more than we throw the ball this year every single game, because if we do, that means we're winning every single game. So.
Given Marcus Smith's skill set, is reasonable to think that maybe he could contribute sooner an inside linebacker than he was ready to an outside linebacker?
Sure. Maybe. I don't know. I mean, he's got a skill set, and he is athletic, and he can play. You know, but his position that he played in college was defensive end, then outside linebacker. So I think it was maybe a little bit more of a projection, but, you know, the circumstances right now, we only have three healthy inside linebackers, so we got to get a fourth guy ready. So Marcus was the one guy that we felt on the outside that could contribute and swing back inside. So he can cover a tight end. You know, he's got that athletic ability, and that's a good point, Les, in terms of what he can do. And it'll be interesting. That's why I said we've only had him for a day. You know, so for me to say, you know, Marcus, after one day, we're locked and loaded at inside linebacker, but he does have a skill set that translates to that, and that's the reason Billy and we sat down as a staff and we made the decision that's the guy from the outside linebacker pool that can kind of come to the inside and jump in for us there. So
can you talk about the dynamic of facing Deshaun, a guy that, you know, your guys know his tendencies because they played against him for years, but he also knows yours from last year. Like, how do you think that's going to...
I think it's a great point. I think it's a wash then. We know him, he knows us, so... I mean, he's got experience against Kerry and Bradley and the guys that will line up against him, and our guys have experience against them. So, you know, it's not – I don't think anybody has an advantage in that situation.